Well, today's going to be a different kind of service. Steve, we have noisemakers. If you want to participate, this is an audience participation sort of thing. It is Purim, but the irony is not lost that there's a war going on right now in Iran. You realize Iran is the setting for this story right here. And I am just praying, hoping, even believing that God is working a great deliverance even now. Our theme for 2026 is Embrace Transformation. And the Jewish Feast of Purim officially begins tomorrow evening. Now, Purim, what does that mean? Purim means lot, as in a roll of the dice kind of thing, you know? And it's called that because the die was cast for a day when the Jews would be wiped out. They literally rolled the dice to figure out which day the Jews would be wiped out. And then God turned it around and made it a great day of deliverance for his people. Well, what does that mean for us? Well, there's a lot of things that happen to us that seem to be just kind of random or chance. You know, we even talk about our lot in life. But Purim invites us to see God at work behind the scenes, transforming people, circumstances, even whole nations. Now, we're going to celebrate Purim the way the Jewish people do, with an interactive reading of the book of Esther and a celebration. Today is not a day to sit quietly in church. And we're leaving the children in for this. You guys can get into it too. This requires audience participation. So I want you to interact with the story. Feel free to laugh, cry, shout, dance. Yes, Linda, you can dance. Celebrate the characters in the story. Now, to make it simpler and easy reading, I'm going to be reading from the Message Bible with just a few edits, and the words will be up on the screen. You can follow along. The characters that we are going to be interacting with are in bold, although I have to say the font that I chose does not show the bold as clearly as I'd like it to. We will be reading it in six acts, and when you hear certain characters, you will cheer or boo as is appropriate. So here are the characters. First of all, Haman. Haman is the bad guy. You boo for Haman. So Jewish tradition says that his name should not even be heard, thus the noisemakers. Feel free to just drown out his name with noise. Now Mordecai is the good guy, right? And you clap and you cheer whenever you hear his name, all right? Then there's Esther. Esther is the heroine of our story. And whenever you hear her name mentioned, we say, ah, that's because everybody thinks, even if they don't say it, that she is beautiful inside and out. King Xerxes is another main character who is mentioned the most. Whenever you hear the king, we give a little fanfare, da-da-da-da, okay? Makes you feel like you're in the royal palace, okay? That's the setting of this story. And then there's Queen Vashti, best supporting actress. She needs encouragement, so when you hear her name, mostly at the beginning of the story, you give her a, you go, girl, because she really could use your encouragement, all right? And then there's a few other servants or eunuchs who are mentioned by name, and I feel like, you know, we should give them a shout out, you know, like a, hey, bro, or dude, you know, They need a little bit of encouragement, too, and you know, we can just kind of help affirm their masculinity that way. But after we do this, we want to be sure to kind of try to quiet it down then again quickly so we can get through it and everybody can hear what's being said. But if you do get a little carried away, that would be normal for a Purim celebration. Because after all, it is a time to let loose and celebrate freedom. And then there is one more character who is actually never mentioned at all in the story, but who is really the most important character of all. That's right, God, or Yahweh, is never actually mentioned in the book of Esther, but his presence is behind everything. So I want to encourage you to do this. If you look and listen carefully, you will see him in the story. Sometimes working or speaking through other characters, but here, let's do this. If you see God at work in the story, just silently put up a hand and give him praise. Can you do that? Yeah. So let's begin. Act one. This act is called the beauty contest. This is the story of something that happened in the time of King Xerxes. In the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his officials and ministers. For 6 months, he put on an exhibit of the huge wealth of his empire and its stunningly beautiful royal splendors. And at the conclusion of the exhibit, the king threw a week-long party for everyone living in Susa, the capital, important and unimportant alike. And the party was in the garden courtyard of the king's summer house. And the courtyard was elaborately decorated in white and blue cotton curtains tied with linen and purple cords to silver rings on marble columns. Silver and gold couches were arranged in a mosaic pavement of jewels, marble, mother of pearl, and colored stones. Drinks were served in golden chalices, each chalice one of a kind, and the royal wine flowed freely. Cheers to a generous king! Meanwhile, Queen Vashti was throwing a separate party for the women inside the royal palace. On the seventh day of the party, the king, high on wine, ordered seven eunuchs who were his personal servants to bring Queen Vashti and her resplendent royal crown. He wanted to show off her beauty to the guests and the officials. She was extremely good looking, but Queen Vashti, yeah, maybe don't go, girl, refused to come. King Xerxes lost his temper. Seething with anger over her insolence, the king called his counselors, all experts in legal matters. It was the king's practice to consult his expert advisors, and he asked them what legal recourse he had against Queen Vashti for not obeying his summons. Then Memucan spoke up in the council of the kings and the princes. It's not only the king that she has insulted, it's all of us. The word's going to get out. Did you hear the latest about Queen Vashti? King Xerxes ordered her to be brought to him, and she wouldn't do it. When the women hear it, they're going to start treating their husbands with contempt. The day the wives of the Persian and Mede officials get wind of Queen's insolence, they will be out of control. Is that what we want? A country of angry women who don't know their place? So if the king agrees, let him pronounce a royal ruling and have it recorded in the laws of the Persians and Medes so that it cannot be revoked, that Vashti is permanently banned from King Xerxes' presence. And let the king give her royal position to a woman who knows her place. And when the king's ruling becomes public knowledge throughout the kingdom, extensive as it is, every woman, regardless of her social position, will show proper respect for her husband. The king and the princes, well, they like this. And the king did what Memucan proposed. He sent bulletins to every part of the kingdom, to each province in its own script, to each people in their own language. Every man is to be the master of his own house, and whatever he says goes. And later, when King Xerxes, when his anger had cooled, he was having second thoughts about what Vashti had done and what he ordered against her. And the king's young attendants stepped in and got the ball rolling. Let's search for a beautiful young virgins for the king. And let the king appoint officials in every province of his kingdom to bring every beautiful young virgin to the palace. And Haggai, the king's eunuch who oversees the women, he'll put them through the beauty treatments. And let the girl who best pleases the king be made queen in place of Vashti. And the king liked this advice and took it. Now there was a Jew who was living in the palace complex in Susa, and his name was Mordecai. His ancestors had been taken from Jerusalem with the exiles and carried off into exile. And Mordecai had reared his cousin Hadassah, who was otherwise known as Esther, since she had no father or mother. Now, the girl had a good figure and a beautiful face. And her parents died, and Mordecai had adopted her. When the king's order had been publicly posted, many young girls were brought to the palace complex of Susa and given over to Haggai, who was the overseer of women, and Esther was among them. Now Haggai liked Esther, and he took a special interest in her. And right off, he started her beauty treatments, ordered special food, assigned her 7 personal maids from the palace, and put her and her maids in the best rooms in the harem. And Esther didn't say anything about her family or racial background because Mordecai told her not to. And every day Mordecai strolled beside the court of the harem to find out how Esther was and to get news of what she was doing. Now each girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes after she had completed the 12 months of prescribed beauty treatments. And when it was Esther's turned to go into the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the eunuch in charge of the harem, had recommended. And Esther, just as she was, won the admiration of everyone who saw her. And she was taken to King Xerxes and the royal palace. And the king fell in love with Esther far more than with any of the other women. He was totally smitten by her. He placed a royal crown on her head and made her queen in place of Vashti. And then the king gave a great banquet for his nobles and officials. Esther's banquet. He proclaimed a holiday for all the provinces and handed out gifts with royal generosity. End of Act 1. Now Act 2. This one's called A Game of Chance. Remember, Purim means lot, which is a game of chance. On one of the occasions when the virgins were being gathered together, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. All this time, Esther had kept her family background a secret, as Mordecai had ordered. Esther still did what Mordecai told her, just as when she was being raised by him. And on this day, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, and two of the eunuchs that were guarding the entrance, they had it in for the king. And they were making plans to kill King Xerxes. But Mordecai learned of the plot and told Queen Esther, who told King Xerxes, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the thing was investigated and confirmed as true, the two men were hanged on the gallows. And this was all written down in a logbook and kept for the king's use. So sometime later, King Xerxes promoted Haman, the Agagite, making him the highest-ranking official in all the government. And the king's servants at the king's gate, well, they used to honor him by bowing down and kneeling before Haman. That's what the king commanded. Except Mordecai. Mordecai wouldn't do it. He wouldn't bow down and kneel. And the king's servants at the king's gate asked Mordecai about it. Why do you cross the king's command? And day after day they spoke to him, but he wouldn't listen. So they went to Haman to see whether something should be done about it. Now Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw for himself that Mordecai didn't bow down and kneel before him, he was outraged. Meanwhile, learning that Mordecai was a Jew, Haman hated to waste his fury on just one Jew. He looked for a way to eliminate not just Mordecai, but all the Jews throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. So in the first month of the 12th year of Xerxes, the poor, that is the lot, was cast under Haman's charge to determine the propitious day and month. And the lot turned up the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman spoke with King Xerxes. There's an odd set of people scattered throughout the provinces of your kingdom who don't fit in. Their customs and ways are different from those of everyone else. Worse, they disregard the king's laws, and they're an affront. The king should not put up with them. If it please the king, let orders be given that they be destroyed. I'll pay for it myself. I'll deposit 375 tons of silver into the royal bank to finance the operation. And the king slipped his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the Agagite, arch enemy of the Jews. Go ahead, the king said to Haman. It's your money. Do whatever you want with those people. The king's secretaries were brought in. orders were written out word for word as Haman had addressed them, and they were written in the script of each province and the language of each people in the name of King Xerxes and sealed with the royal signet ring. And the orders were to massacre, kill, and eliminate all of the Jews on a single day and to plunder their goods. The king and Haman sat back and had a drink while the city of Susa reeled from the news. Yeah, that's Act 2. Now we go to Act 3. The stakes are raised. When Mordecai learned what had been done, he ripped his clothes to shreds and he put on sackcloth and ashes. As the king's order was posted in every province, there was a loud lament among the Jews. Fasting, weeping, wailing, and most of them stretched out in sackcloth and ashes. Esther's maids and the eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was stunned. She sent fresh clothes to Mordecai so that he could take off his sackcloth, but he wouldn't accept them. Esther called to get the full story of what was happening, and Mordecai told her everything that had happened to him. And he also told him exactly the amount of money that Haman had promised to deposit in the royal bank to finance the massacre of the Jews. And Mordecai also gave a copy of the bulletin that had been posted ordering the massacre so they could show it to Esther, along with instructions to go to the king and intercede and plead with him for her people. Esther sent this message back to Mordecai. Everyone who works for the king here knows that there is a single fate for every man or woman who approaches the king without being invited: death. There's one exception. If the king extends his gold scepter, then he or she may live. And it's been 30 days now since I have been invited to come to the king. Mordecai sent her this message. Don't think that just because you live in the king's house that you're one Jew who will get out of this alive. If you persist in staying silent at a time like this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else. But you and your family will be wiped out. And who knows, maybe you were made queen for such a time as this. Esther sent back her answer to Mordecai: go and get all the Jews together. Fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, either day or night. I and my maids will fast with you. If you will do this, I will go to the king, even though it's forbidden. And if I die, I die. Mordecai left and carried out Esther's instructions. And 3 days later, Esther, dressed in her royal robes, took up a position in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's throne room. Now the king was on his throne facing the entrance. And when he noticed Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased to see her. And the king extended the gold scepter in his hand, and Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king asked, What is your desire, Queen Esther? What do you want? Ask and it's yours, even if it's half my kingdom. If it please the king, said Esther, let the king come with Haman to a dinner that I've prepared for him. Get Haman at once, said the king, so we can go to dinner with Esther. So the king and Haman joined Esther at the dinner she had arranged. And as they were drinking the wine, the king said, now what is it you want? Half of my kingdom isn't too much. Just ask. Esther answered, here's what I want. If the king favors me and is pleased to do what I desire and ask, then let the king and Haman come again tomorrow to the dinner that I will fix for them. Then I'll give a straight answer to the king's question. Haman left the palace that day happy, beaming, and then he saw Mordecai sitting at the king's gate, ignoring him, oblivious to him. And Haman was furious with Mordecai. But he held it in and he went home. We're halfway through the story. This next act is called A Turn of Events. Haman got his friends together and his wife and started bragging about how much money he had and all the times the king had honored him and his promotion to the highest position of the government. And on top of all that, Haman continued, Queen Esther has invited me to a private dinner that she gave for the king, just the three of us. And she's invited me to another one tomorrow. But I can't enjoy any of it when I see Mordecai, the Jew, sitting at the king's gate. His wife and all his friends said, build a gallows 75 feet high, and first thing in the morning, speak with the king. Get him to order Mordecai hanged on it. Then happily go with the king to dinner. Haman liked that. So he had the gallows built. And that night, the king, he couldn't sleep. He ordered the day-by-day journal of events to be brought and read to him. Yeah, that's right. Who guarded the entrance and who can... They came across a story there about the time that Mordecai had exposed the plot of the two royal eunuchs who guarded the entrance and who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. And the king asked, what great honor was given to Mordecai for this? Nothing, replied the king's servants who were in attendance. Nothing has been done for him. Now Haman had just come into the outer court to talk to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows he had built for him. And when Haman entered, the king said, what would be appropriate for the man that the king especially wants to honor? And Haman thought to himself, he must be talking about honoring me. Who else? So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, bring the royal robe that the king has worn. and a horse the king has ridden on, one with the royal crown on its head. And then give the robe and the horse to one of the king's most noble princes, and have the prince lead him on horseback through the city square, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man whom the king especially wants to honor. Go and do it," the king said to Haman. "Don't waste another minute. Take the robe and the horse and do what you have proposed to Mordecai the Jew. Don't leave out a single detail of your plan." So Haman took the robe and the horse and led Mordecai through the city square, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man whom the king especially wants to honor." Then Mordecai returned to the gate, but Haman fled to his house, thoroughly mortified, hiding his face. And when Haman had finished telling his wife and all his friends everything that happened to him, they said, "If Mordecai is in fact a Jew, your luck, your bad luck has only just begun. You don't stand a chance against him. You are as good as ruined." And when they were still talking, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman off to the dinner that Esther had prepared. Whew. Wow. Yeah. Okay. This next act is called a change of fortune. You want to see what happens? At this second dinner, the king asked again, "Queen Esther, what would you like? Half of my kingdom, just ask and it's yours." And Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your eyes, give me my life and give my people their lives. We've been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, sold to be massacred, eliminated." And King Xerxes exploded. "Who? Where is he? This is monstrous. An enemy, an adversary, this evil Haman," said Esther. Haman was terror-stricken. And the king, raging, left his wine and stalked out into the palace garden. And Haman stood there pleading with Queen Esther for his life. He could see that he was doomed. And as the king came back from the palace garden into the banquet hall, Haman was groveling at the couch on which Esther reclined. And the king roared out, "Will you even molest the queen while I'm just around the corner?" When that word left the king's mouth, all the blood drained from Haman's face. Harbona, one of the eunuchs, spoke up. "Look over there. There's the gallows that Haman built for Mordecai, the one who saved the king's life. And it's right next to Haman's house, 75 feet high." And the king said, "Hang him on it." So Haman was hanged on the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And the king's hot anger cooled. That same day, King Xerxes gave Queen Esther the estate of Haman, arch enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, and Esther had explained their relationship. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken back from Haman, and he gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over Haman's estate. And Esther again spoke to the king, falling at his feet, begging with tears to counter the evil of Haman, the Agagite, and revoke the plan which he had plotted against the Jews. How can I stand to see this catastrophe wipe out my people? And how can I spare to stand by and watch the massacre of my own relatives? King Xerxes said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, "Go ahead now and write whatever you decide on behalf of the Jews, then seal it with the signet ring." And Mordecai wrote under the name of King Xerxes, and he sealed the order with the signet ring, and he sent out the bulletins by couriers on horseback, riding the fastest royal steeds bred from the royal stud. And the king's order authorized the Jews in every city to arm and defend themselves to the death, killing anyone who threatened them or their women or their children, and confiscating for themselves anything owned by their enemies. And the day set for this in all of King Xerxes' provinces was the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. Mordecai walked out of the king's presence wearing a royal robe of violet and white, a huge gold crown, and a purple cape of fine linen. And the city of Susa exploded with joy. For the Jews, it was all sunshine and laughter. They celebrated, they were honored. It was that way all over the country, in every province, in every city, when the king's bulletin was posted. The Jews took to the streets in celebration and cheering and feasting. And not only that, but many non-Jews became Jews. Now it was dangerous not to be a Jew. One more act. Wonder what happened. So on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the king's order came into effect. This was the very day that the enemies of the Jews had planned to overpower them, but the tables were now turned, and the Jews overpowered those who hated them. Mordecai was now a power in the palace. And as Mordecai became more and more powerful, his reputation had grown in all the provinces. So the Jews finished off their enemies with the sword, but they took no plunder. The king told Queen Esther, In the palace complex alone here in Susa, the Jews have killed 500 men plus Haman's 10 sons. Think of the killing that must have been done in the rest of the provinces. What else do you want? Name it, and it's yours. Your wish is my command. If it pleased the king, Queen Esther responded, give the Jews of Susa permission to extend the terms of the order one other day, and have the bodies of Haman's 10 sons hanged in public display on the gallows. And the king commanded it. The order was extended, and the bodies of Haman's 10 sons were publicly hanged, and the Jews in Susa went at it again. On the 14th day of Adar, they killed another 300 men in Susa, but again, they took no plunder. Meanwhile, in the rest of the king's provinces, the Jews had organized and defended themselves, freeing themselves from oppression. But the next day, the 14th, they took it easy and celebrated with much food and laughter. Yeah. But in Susa, since the Jews had banded together on both the 13th and the 14th day, they made the 15th day their holiday for laughing and feasting. Mordecai wrote all of this down and sent copies to all the Jews and all of King Xerxes' provinces, regardless of the distance, calling for an annual celebration on the 14th and 15th days of Adar as the occasion when the Jews got relief from their enemies, the month in which their sorrow turned to joy, mourning somersaulted into a holiday for parties and fun and laughter and the sending and receiving of presents and of giving gifts to the poor. And they did it. What started then became a tradition, continuing the practice of what Mordecai had written to them. Haman had schemed to destroy all the Jews. He had cast the poor, the lot, to throw them into a panic and destroy them. But when Queen Esther intervened with the king, he gave written orders that the evil scheme that Haman had worked out should boomerang back on his own head, and he and his sons were hanged on the gallows. That's why these days are called Purim, for the word poor or lot, because of everything written in this letter and because of all that they had been through, the Jews agreed to continue, and it became a tradition for them, their children, and all future converts to remember these 2 days every year on the specified dates set down in the letter. These days are to be remembered and kept by every single generation. These days of Purim must never be neglected among the Jews, and the memory of them must never die out among their descendants. Esther made sure that the tradition of Purim was written in a book. And King Xerxes, he did what kings do. Imposed taxes from one end of the empire to the other. And all of his other extensive accomplishments, along with a detailed account of the brilliance of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, it's all written in the Chronicles of the Kings of Media and Persia. And Mordecai the Jew ranked second in command to King Xerxes, And he was popular among the Jews and greatly respected by them. And he worked hard for the good of his people. And he cared for the peace and prosperity of all the people. The end. But it's not the end. No. Because God is still working, right? He's still delivering his people. And what do we learn from this story? We learn that when things look bad, when they look really bad, don't forget that God is behind the scenes. Still moving, still working, still turning bad things around and working through his people. Pat, would you come? Pat, are you going to do the blessing? Yeah. So as we close with this song, can we make this interactive as well? This is the blessing from Leviticus. Can we sing it to one another as a blessing over one another? So, you know, we always face the front and we sing our songs to God, but I think let's sing this song. Well, we're obviously it's from God and it's to him, but we can also participate by blessing one another. So let's do that.